Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Sorry, I'm in a snorting mood, I guess. I just was so, like, the look that I gave this kid. There it is. Hi, I'm Marielle Segarra, and welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. Thanks for joining us. And Sabri, if you were surprised by that, yes, they do roll the music right in the middle of when you're talking sometimes.
Okay.
Oh, we're still going.
I'm Sabri Benishore, hosting Make Me Smart for the first time. I did not know that music was going to come up. I'm in for Kai Rizdal, who's quarantining, apparently. Sorry, Kai. Mm-hmm. But thanks for having me. It's Thursday. We will talk about the news, and then we'll end on some Make Me Smiles and send you on your way.
Yeah,
so I guess we start with the news, right? Is that what we do?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll go first. So this story seems super important, and I want to talk about it, but I also feel like I need to give a caveat that it is not my area of expertise, so I just badgered Andy Euler with questions about it in the minutes before this show rolled. Yeah, he was on the elliptical at the gym and trying to work out while I was like, what is liquid natural gas? Okay, so this is a story about energy, and specifically the EU is considering a ban on Russian imports of oil, which when I saw that, I mean, we've been talking about how much the EU relies on Russia for energy, oil in particular, and also natural gas and coal. And that's Germany is probably in the worst position here, but everything I've read is that there really aren't enough alternatives to ban imports at this point. And so I was thinking, like, how does this work? And I don't think there's really a good answer to that after talking to Andy, but it does seem like oil would be easier to ban, that there might be more alternatives to it, and also a bit faster, because of the infrastructure required to get gas, in particular to Germany. So it's worth saying also that if they just tried to cut it off like that, then that would really hurt Germany's economy and could drive it into a recession, because it needs this energy to make stuff, especially, like, one example was chocolate, right? It's a high energy use product. So really curious what's going to happen with that. And if we're talking about this being a political move, something to put pressure on Russia, but it's going to take possibly years to happen, how is that actually effective?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. I mean, so I guess the idea is that with natural gas, it's like you have to keep it under high pressure. It has to become a liquid for you to move it around. And so it's a lot harder to, like, build a liquefaction plant, you know, to get it to your shores or whatever. But I guess oil, you can just put in a boat and send wherever. I wonder, like, how long are they going to be able to buy? How are they going to, like, signal, like, we are serious about this? Just as soon as we build a new pipeline, we're going to do something, you know, like,
right.
They kind of have
into
to, like, signal their seriousness.
But 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the ban would be on oil, but I'm curious what's going to happen with natural gas. And one story I was reading said, though, that German imports of oil have already dropped from 35% to 25% now, and its gas imports have been cut, too. So maybe they've done what they can so far, now they'd actually have to, like, make some big changes.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, too, just that there is, you know, there is an element of disagreement even on this, like, very core economic question. I guess that is interesting because, you know, I know, I'm trying to figure out just like how unified Europe is. So, for example, the states that border Russia, there's some disagreement between the northern states, Poland and Baltic states, versus like Slovakia and Hungary in the south. And the, like the southern countries I was reading, you see more like Russian disinformation, like more sympathy for, you know, Russia's story behind this war, that like they're denazifying Ukraine or whatever, more conspiracy theories. And even at the political level, like more just generally, you know, less sympathy for Ukraine.
And
it's just, you know, that level of fracturing, it's very interesting to wonder how far that's going to spread when you have like this economic, when you have additional economic disagreements on top of that. And I mean, I'll tell you who's watching is China. Like China is taking notes and being like, how long does, you know, Europe, Japan, the US, how long do they stay on the same page? Are they even on the same page? How far will they go together before they start bickering and you know, fall apart? So, I mean, that's what they're predicting already. Yeah. So I'm just like, I wonder how they're right they are, you know?
Yeah. And where does China fit in here in terms of energy? Does it, can it supply, can it kind of swoop in and supply some of this?
I don't think it will be supplying. I think it will be buying. I think if anything, it would be just buying from Russia.
From Russia. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're up next. Tell us about Elon Musk.
Elon Musk. So, all right. So Elon Musk already owns like 9% of Twitter, and he was going to join the board. And then he was like, well, actually, I'm not going to join the board. Because the board also was like, if he joined the board, he would not be allowed to buy more shares. There would be limitations on it. Anyway, so he's like, okay, so I'm not actually going to join the board. I'm going to just buy the company for like $43 billion. And now he is saying, well, maybe I won't buy the company. Maybe I can't pull it off, but I have a plan B, but no one knows what the plan B is. So it's just the latest in this drama of like, is Elon Musk going to buy Twitter or not? And I feel like the, one of the funny things here is that he, despite being the world's richest man worth $250 billion, is cash poor. Like they, I saw that in an article, like he's cash poor because all of his money is tied up in, you know, his stocks of like Tesla and SpaceX or, you know, so.
So does he actually have $43 billion sitting around that he could buy Twitter with?
Would
he
not
have
really
to pay in cash, or could he pay in stock?
So he, well, so, okay. If he were to just like sell $43 billion worth of his stocks, he would have to pay a ton of taxes on it, first of all. Apparently he can, like Twitter employ or Tesla employees can borrow 25% worth of their shares from the company in money to do things with. And he might have some like rich buddies that would go in on it with him. And he might be able to get some money from a bank. But so far, like, I mean, so far there's sort of like skepticism. And it's not like Twitter shareholders or Tesla shareholders are like rejoicing, or the, you know, stock price is like like shooting up because everyone's like, yeah, Elon, join Twitter. Everyone, I think, is just like on the couch with the popcorn watching what crazy thing is going to happen next.
Like, what is happening? Yeah, I don't,
like, literally what is
happening.
Doesn't
it feel like he's just trolling? I mean, it wasn't, yes. There was some joke, like 420 joke. I mean, it was $43 billion, but wasn't it like,
yeah, the share price was like 54.20, and people were like, that's like not a coincidence.
Right. It's his joke about smoking pot.
Yeah. Hilarious.
Yeah. Spelling that one out. Yeah, he's so funny. Yeah. Yeah, I do think, you know, it's possible that Elon listens to this podcast, because Kai said the other day, he was like, you know, Elon could just buy. Is that my Kai impression?
I know. No.
no. Like he said, you know, Elon has the pocket change to just buy Twitter. So maybe he's just getting advice from Make Me Smart.
Maybe he is. I heard that. And that's exactly what I thought of when I saw the news that he was considering buying it. I was like, Kai literally said he could buy it and have like $200 billion left over.
Huh. Well, yeah. We better choose our words carefully here because I guess Mr. Musk listens. All right. Well, Juan Carlos, I think it's time to smile. Okay, I'm going to go first on this one.
Okay.
I was walking around my neighborhood today. It's a gorgeous day in New York, so part of that is why I was smiling. But also, I saw this giant inflatable Easter bunny, which, like, when I say giant, I have a picture of it here. It's like a Brooklyn brownstone is a couple floors. This thing is like a floor and a half of a Brooklyn brownstone.
It's so cute.
It's huge and also terrifying. Like when I was a kid and I was picturing the Easter bunny coming to my house, I actually was afraid every Easter Eve because I was like, this horrifying huge rabbit is going to come in here. I like did not want to wake up, did not want to meet the bunny. But my point here is just like my neighbors are absolute pros at holiday decorating. Like they go all out. It's this is Easter, but they do like Valentine's Day. They do St. Patrick's Day. They do. I have a lot of good pictures from Halloween where they get super creepy with it. And they have like skeletons hanging off the roof or I don't even know, like a giant spider. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. When I was little. That's great, though. Yeah, it is a cute bunny. When I was little, when I was like 4 or 5, we went to some sort of Easter party thing in the park. This was in Missouri. And some woman on the stage was like, now the Easter bunny's going to be here, and he's going to be looking for good little boys and girls who share their candy with others. And so I went to my brother, and I was like, all right, brother, I am going to give you some of my Easter eggs in front of the Easter bunny so that he knows that I am generous and share, but I want them back afterward. And so then I was like, I gave him candy. And then the Easter bunny, this giant Easter bunny, like the one you are talking about, like started to like waddle over, but he was so giant and he was terrifying. So terrifying that we just ran away like screaming because we were so terrified of him and our big scheme like to.
Oh my God. You know, yeah. You had this whole scheme and you didn't even pull it off.
Yeah. We were horrible children. We were just the worst.
I think it's pretty smart. And if you like ever hang out with kids on Halloween, you'll see how much they know about negotiation and trade because they're like coming home with their bags full of candy and like dumping it out on the floor and doing like, you know, give you this Reese's for 3 Twizzlers, or you're like learning what's most important to some other kid. They really like Smarties, but you don't like Smarties. So is there like a comparative advantage thing going on there?
Yeah.
I always think like kids are so smart about economics and also about pulling scams.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, guess I should give them more credit.
Yeah.
Well, my make me smile moment was, so I came into the bureau where I like have almost not been at all for 2 years, other than to like refill my plant watering things. And as you know, my office has a bunch of plants. So anyway, I got in and there's this flower that blooms once a year and it's a cactus that lives in trees. It's called an epiphyllum. Anyway,
is
I
that
was
the
like,
corpse flower?
No, but that one is still in the conference room. But this one only blooms once a year and it had already, all the blooms were dead. And I was like, you know, oh man, I missed it. But then I saw one, it was still open. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. Not only after 2 years, these office plants are still alive somehow, barely. Mm-hmm. But B, I got to see it.
That's amazing. So didn't you set up kind of an elaborate watering system so that it would like, they'd kind of get water on their own.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. There's like all these tubs of water with these little tubes that like feed into all the plants and gradually release water. And they last like a solid like 2 months. And then the plants themselves, a lot of them are like cacti. So, or they don't need a lot of water. So they can handle it. Except for there was one casualty that didn't make it, but it's okay. I have a cutting of it at home. It's fine.
I feel like plants are what makes you smile most days.
I think that would be true.
That
true.
In the gym.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it for us today. We will be back tomorrow for Economics on Tap. We'll be doing the news with a drink and playing a game. That show will stream live on YouTube. So please join us at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube. And that means, Sabri, you and I have to be camera ready.
Okay. I will put on clothes. In the meantime, send us your thoughts or questions, please. Our email is makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a message, 508-UB-SMART. And yeah, today was literally the first day I put on clothes because I had to come into the office.
So you don't wear clothes at all?
No, I literally have interviewed like three like Nobel Prize winners in my underwear.
Wow. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with help from our intern, Tiffany Bowie. Today's episode was engineered by Juan Carlos Torrado.
Bridget Bodnar is the senior producer. The director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
I want to be very clear that I always wear clothes during my interviews. Sabri, not so much, I guess.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.